Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 10th of November, recording at 8:58 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, a quick review of the week. During the week, we saw stock markets mostly steady, although a point I've been making is that some of the uptrends had been steepening, and that left them vulnerable to corrections. And we have seen a little bit more choppy action here recently, but very much within the uptrends that evolved from the June reaction lows for most stock markets. And government bonds generally steady overall. The U.S. dollar, it's been weak and fell further today, but managed to close well off the lows, probably a little bit of short covering. Precious metals had a good week, and they're mixed in here today, with platinum up and silver up and gold down just over $4 in the after hours, trading right now, and palladium down. And the green, before that, industrial metals. They had been pretty steady overall, but took quite a big hit in here today. That's interesting. More on that later. And the grains, beans, they had seen a little, they were also generally strong, but have seen a little profit taking near the end of the week. Okay, so what's it all mean? As far as stock markets are concerned, this is a favorable period seasonally. We have had a plethora of evidence to indicate that that medium-term correction pretty well ended following the June reaction lows, and then there was a period of support building and then a steady recovery. Now, not everything has seen the recovery, but not everything was ever necessarily going to do just that. And there is a risk premium that has come into markets. And the areas that have been most vulnerable, or the area that's been most vulnerable, has been the Middle Eastern oil producers. And I described back when people were talking about how absolutely spectacular the Saudi stock market had performed, that was the one genuine bubble, that those oil producers were the big bubble on the way up. And they peaked, I think, a little bit before they peaked around April. And we have subsequently seen, I mean, that Saudi index, I haven't calculated the percentage figure precisely, but my guess is it must be down at least 60% in here right now. But something that'll be more relevant for most of you will be Japan. And Japan is putting in a poor performance here. This is where I say thank goodness for charts, because I would have thought that Japan could easily have been quite a firm market in here in the last few months, but it hasn't. And I put great store by the Japanese banks, saying, look at the Japanese banks. And as a general rule of thumb here for subscribers, veterans will have heard me say this before, but for new subscribers in particular, a stock market isn't really going to do anything on the upside without a respectable performance by its banking sector. Now, by respectable, that doesn't mean that the banks have to be in the pole position and leading the rally overall, although they often do, coming off lows. But it's just a classic sign. If you don't have confidence in the banking sector, then really that market is going to be in trouble. And the Japanese banks are in danger of breaking down out of their overall ranging pattern. So that's a major underperformer there. But overall, most of the stock markets are doing quite well, albeit some of those trends are a bit overstretched. Well, quite a few of them are a bit overstretched. And when you look at the weekly charts and you see markets that have risen, oh, 10, 12 weeks without a down week, it doesn't require an enormous amount of imagination to appreciate that we're going to get some sort of lengthy pause and consolidation before too very long. Now, a lengthy pause in consolidation is not a terrifying medium-term correction such as we saw in the from the May highs earlier this year. A lengthy pause in consolidation would mean that the rallies spill over, they react a little bit more than we have seen recently, so breaking the upward momentum and then go into ranging phases. That lies ahead, and that would actually be healthy, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see it. And then you remember we had the little discussion in the emails about those forecasts for Dow Jones, 13,000, I think that was Barron's, and I made the comment that many people, behaviorists among you, would look on that as a contrary indicator, and then was nicely rebuked by one subscriber who pointed out that this was not mainstream media. But nonetheless, bold forecasts, anybody's bold forecasts, I think, are a little bit of a warning sign clue, but I don't want to belabor the point. Overall, another factor that I think is quite important in here, in the very short term, I'd said that yesterday that we had seen those storm clouds that I've referred to on a number of occasions that are on the horizon for stock markets. I said they'd taken a step forward here, quite a significant step forward. And that oil had been one of the big factors responsible for that. Lesser factor with the strength of of many of the commodity markets, but oil being by far the most important. Said one storm cloud that had not moved forward was it was upward pressure on the government bond yields, and that still hasn't happened. Well, oil today took a step back and is currently down 156 in the late trading here, and it's back below $60. It's at 59.60. So that stepped back, and that actually helped Wall Street today to recover from a down day and close up on the day with some very modest gains. Okay. So, where do we go from here? Well, I'll stay with those storm clouds for a moment. As long as government bond yields are not rising, then and as long as the oil price is not surging ahead, not on a one-day basis and then giving most of it up, but I'm talking about establishing a clear upward trend. As long as oil is not doing that, and as long as the government bond yields are not rising, then those most dangerous of the storm clouds are staying they well the, on the horizon, but they're not causing problems. In other words, when I said we would see markets pull in lose upward momentum before too long and get a and see reactions and consolidations rather than big corrections. When we next get oil racing ahead, and when we next get government bonds, long-dated government bond yields pushing up sharply, then stock markets will become very vulnerable to another of those medium-term corrections. But bear market, I don't see it in here. And I think overall, 2007 is likely to be quite a favorable year overall, and that may well run into 2008. And I think it would take an exogenous shock to change that outlook. And that's something that can always happen, but it's tends by definition is a generally unpredictable event. Now, when might those storm clouds move closer? Well, the best answer is to say, we don't know, I don't know. One can only guess. But looking at oil, and I wrote about oil quite a bit yesterday, looking at oil, I think this is a situation, and I've said this before, where we're likely to see a fair amount of support building take place. So that's lots of backing and filling and sideways ranging, and then eventually that supports a steady rise. I just don't think that's likely to happen short term, but if we saw evidence that that was happening short term, then I would certainly factor that into the overall analytical equation. But my hunch is that it will take time. And you've heard me say before, with medium-term corrections, and I'm very much of the view that this is nothing more than a medium-term correction, a significant medium-term correction for oil. Third largest correction since over the last 6 years or so, third largest in percentage terms. And I do feel very much that we will see oil resume its overall upward trend at some stage, but the likelihood with many of these medium-term corrections, and certainly I think this time with the petroleum complex, is that you get quite a bit of ranging in a support-building phase before that move on the upside occurs. So oil is, albeit ranging and showing evidence that it's bottoming out, is far from a headwind for global stock markets. It isn't. If anything, it's a bit of a tailwind because people are saying, well, it's bringing down inflationary pressures, and it also helps global GDP growth to pick up a bit, which will create some other inflationary pressures, but they won't be all that's they're on, they're not likely to be all that serious. Okay, now the areas that I like the most as far as global stock markets are concerned are very much the same. They are my absolutely favorite area would be the Asian growth story. Now, as I've said before, that won't always be the top performing story. But I do feel that if we look at risk versus reward, I find it hard to make a better case than for the Asian region. I think that the risks there are generally lower. Now, I'm talking particularly about emerging Asia. And that's what I like the most. And right at the very top is India. Now, let me quantify the risk here because India is on a higher valuation, as you know, than the other Asian stock markets. I think it deserves a higher valuation overall, but as I've said many times, that higher valuation also, and incidentally, the valuation is pretty much in line with Wall Street. So we're not talking about a scarifyingly high valuation by any means, but their point is that there's some much lower valuations in Asia, which make those markets attractive. Thailand is a classic example. So is Malaysia, but I don't think that Thailand is certainly the best example. But I don't think Thailand, as interesting and promising as it is, has the long-term potential that India has. And I suspect most of you would agree with me on that point. But India, because of its high valuation overall, is high beta. So while it will often go up more than other markets during the rally phases, it will also fall more sharply during the corrective phases. But if I was going to have one stock market and do a Rip Van Winkle or go walkabout for a decade, it would, or longer, it would certainly be India. I would feel very, very comfortable with that overall. And I've concentrated my investments in that Asian emerging market sector. And I'm certainly interested in Asian developed markets, South Korea, Singapore, Taiwan, but I don't think, well, it's unreasonable to expect the developed country market, and also Japan, I should say, but not right now. Timing is everything in these markets. It's unreasonable to expect the developed country markets in a good period, evidenced by synchronized global economic growth, the developed countries are not going to have the growth rates that the developing countries are going to have, assuming that they also have good governance. And governance, economic governance at any rate, is another area where a crucial area where I would give the emerging Asian story quite high points, and despite Thailand's problems. Okay, also the resources story. I think this is going to run and run. It's very controversial, as you know, and we will see some very big swings in some of these commodity markets. There's nothing new about that, but I think, we just take this basic story of less than a billion people in the developed world, and then you have approximately 5.5 billion people in the developing world, and a lot of those people are coming up fast thanks to a change in government emphasis away from sort of moribund economic systems to capitalist economic systems, coinciding with globalization and coinciding with the extraordinary technological developments that we have seen in recent years, which have helped some of these emerging, most of these emerging economies to grow much, much more rapidly than would have been the case 10, 20 years ago, never mind 100 years or so ago. So that creates a very, very considerable demand for the resources, and we're seeing that reflected in what I have said from the beginning was a commodity supercycle. When I say from the beginning, I mean really from, I think, 2002, 2003, this was screaming at us, and I think it's going to last for a very, very long time indeed. So that means that resources producing countries, Brazil, Russia, and then the developed ones, Canada, Australia, these are going to do very, very well. Their stock markets are going to do very well overall. New Zealand should also put in that category. Okay, and in terms of the overall environment, I don't think. Well, with all the liquidity that's sloshing around in the system, and I think this is not something that's going to go away quickly. Globalization can really introduces intense competitive pressures, and against that background, currencies—I beg your pardon—countries do not want to have strong currencies, as I've mentioned on many occasions, and many of them will actively seek to get their currencies down, particularly those that are feeling some of the pressure of that economic competition. The U.S. is very much in that category, and therefore, this effort to keep the currency down, I think it's and to avoid deflationary pressures. Is tailor-made for an overall inflationary cycle. And again, when you have an overall inflationary cycle, you will have some pockets of deflation, which we've seen in manufacturing, and then you get them in positive pockets of deflation in the march of technology. But overall, it's an inflationary environment, as I've said on so many occasions. Sometimes people are in denial about that, but no one who pays the household bills is going to be in any doubt that inflation is running way ahead of the CPI and PPI figures, and that's because central banks are not in the business of controlling inflation, they're in the business of controlling inflation expectations. So again, I think that liquidity will likely remain abundant for really quite some time, and that will help to push stock markets up overall, provided inflation doesn't move too fully into the public consciousness Again, this brings us back to central banks trying to manage inflationary expectations. But if the public becomes convinced that inflation is a major problem and we have then surging wages, very unlikely, I think, against the background of globalization, intense competitive pressures that we see, the world isn't exactly short of labor, is it? So the background that I envisage is one of gently rising inflationary pressures, but not in a linear fashion. It'll be rolling waves where you'll see inflation pick up and then it'll subside a bit following periods of higher short-term interest rates and slower GDP growth, but then it will pick up again. And a problem that we will see, taking a very long-term view, is stagflation from time to time when economic growth slows down quite a bit, but the inflationary pressures are still there overall. Now, again, that's an environment where you do not want to have the currencies of countries that have the bigger debt problems, and it also is a very, very powerful argument for inflation hedges, and these range from certainly from gold and its proxies, the other precious metals, to art, works of art, jewelry, property, houses, land, all the traditional inflation hedges. I think these will hold their value more often than not. So I'm not looking for any house price collapse in the United States, so it gets a temporary shakeout, and so it underperforms other investments for a few years, but I don't see any collapse, and I think that all of the inflation hedges will hold their value over the long term in the type of environment that I envisage, which is likely to carry on for at least the next couple of decades, and that'll do for now, won't it? Just to see through that see through that period. Now, you know, I like gold and its proxies, and of the proxies, silver is one of my absolute favorites, and it's come back into form in the last 5 6 5 6 weeks. Now, there have been a number of comments flying around the internet in the last couple of days saying that China's talking about diversifying out of its dollar holdings, China holding over $1 trillion. You know, that's a one followed by nine zeros. That's some serious dosh, you'd say. And people have been saying, well, maybe China is going to put 4 or 5% of that money into gold. I think that's very, very unlikely. And you know, I'm a gold bull, but I'm not going to exaggerate the scope out there for potential buyers. I think it's very unlikely that we will get a major move by China or any other central bank into gold. They will nibble away at time from time to time, and may build a small stake, but I think it will stay really quite small. Now, why would that be? Well, first, there isn't enough gold around. Let's say China decided that it wanted to put a fair whack of that $1 trillion into gold. It wouldn't be able to do it. There just is not enough gold around. It would push gold up several 100th percentile from its current levels. So that's just not going to happen. But then there's an even more important reason, I think, that needs to be aired here. And that is the point that I make so often, that central banks are in the business of managing inflationary expectations. So what would it say about inflationary expectations if we had headlines in the financial pages that China was buying large chunks of gold, or if any other central bank was buying large chunks of gold? And that would fan inflationary expectations, not suppress them. So I just don't see it happening, but it doesn't need to happen. I think investors who understand their history, and I'm talking now about the history of fiat currencies, paper money, they know that it doesn't hold its value over time, and we have an environment where currently the purchasing power erosion of currencies has moved up a gear. So that is a very compelling argument for all of us who are investors, and some of us are also traders, to have an interest in this precious metal sector. And I think the current levels here are still really quite attractive. You may have noticed I've been building up my precious metals positions in recent weeks once again, and expect periodic volatility from these markets. That goes with the territory. And you can say, well, gosh, that makes it too dangerous, or that's really scary, or a big problem. Mind you, somebody who's has their money in a bullion fund can, I think, sleep at night, as I've said all along. But those who deal with leverage, and I do, will have to be able to read the charts and get the tactics right to handle some of those swings and roundabouts. But if it's a problem, it's also an opportunity, because some of us are playing precious metals on the upside now, second time around. In other words, we had that great run up into May from the beginning of the year. Well, it started several years ago, didn't it? But I'm talking about that last surge. When I say second time around, we had that huge surge at the beginning of this year, with prices accelerating higher in April and into May, in setting the markets up for a big shakeout. And we saw the big shakeout. They've done the support building. Now they're moving back up again. It's a very interesting and attractive area, and I'll be talking about it plenty over the next few months, just as I have been recently, because I'll be doing a lot in that area. The industrial metals are scary by comparison. They have had eyebrow-raising, unbelievably good moves. You've heard me say on a number of occasions that I really consider myself to be one of the biggest long-term bulls of these industrial metals on the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. But yet I've continually been surprised with just how well that they have done. Well, there will be times when they will get some swinging corrections, and that maybe now. I know I've seen enough to know not to overreact here on the bear side, but we saw some downward dynamics in here today. The copper pattern is one of the more shaky looking ones overall, and then you get a knee-jerk response in favorite core positions of mine, such as Rio and Billiton and some of the other mines, when you get a day like this in the industrial metal markets. But bear in mind that those shares are selling on such fantastically low multiples, and that the metal prices would have to come back a long way to seriously impact their earnings. The greater risk to earnings for those companies is that they have strikes, or that there are accidents that occur, because mining is a difficult and dangerous business overall. But the contrast that I'm really trying to make right now is that the industrial metals look a lot more risky than the precious metals. I only have one industrial metal position, and that's a very small position in zinc. And to put that into perspective, that very small position in zinc is actually smaller than one of my baby step positions in silver. And zinc was looking great and may still do reasonably well in here. It still has a backwardation. There is a shortage, but it fell sharply in here today. It was started the, or I think it closed yesterday at 4,515. That's the LME third month price, 4,515, and it fell $215 in here. And closed at 4,300, giving a bit of a downward dynamic there. I'm unlikely to increase my long positions in the industrial metals because I would not be surprised to see a period of underperformance overall. But equally, I'm not inclined to short them because there are very few contangos in that industrial metal sector. Okay, just staying with that area, uranium. Uranium has been very much in the news. It's a hot, fashionable sector. It's being promoted right, left, and center in the classic mining boom fashion. Now, I have said over and over again that uranium, a metal of course, but that it is the best of the energy stories. And I'm talking about the uranium price. I don't expect that to change, and although there will be some setbacks from time to time, but I do expect uranium to remain the best of the energy stories by far. But the uranium shares, which have been in fantastic form recently, are really quite speculative. Now, there's nothing wrong with speculating in those when the chart action is good. It's a smart thing to do. If people are going to create a bubble in little junior uranium shares, then a number of people who know how to read charts are going to want to be there. But don't think that all those little junior miners are going to go up and stay there just because there's a huge amount of demand for uranium, because most of these are floated on rumors, some evidence of uranium. There's lots of uranium around the globe, but it's one thing to have the lease rights to some uranium and another to put in a successful mining operation and to convert that into profits for the shareholders. So the vast majority of all these little uranium shares don't earn any money, they lose money. So they have a burn rate. It's the term for that. And they will have rights issues and they will have a pretty volatile performance when a sentiment changes and or you get a correction in the uranium price at some stage. So by all means play them, but play them on the basis of the of the charts. One has to do that. I'd say the same thing also about the gold shares because I don't like the valuations on the gold shares. Not compared to companies like BHP, Rio, and most of the other top world-class diversified mining companies. I regard the gold shares as being essentially for trading, whereas bullion can be tucked away as a long-term investment or traded. I do not feel that the gold shares can be tucked away as a long-term investment. I certainly don't think the junior uranium companies can be tucked away as a long-term investment. Just look at how many of them there are now, and a fair number of those will never earn a bean. Okay, I think that takes me on to the agricultural commodities, and that's a sector where we have seen some very strong moves recently. They're none of the inform ones, or among the most inform ones, are the grain and bean complex, albeit a little overextended, but I wouldn't be surprised to see those go substantially higher from time to time. And that may be sooner rather than later because global reserves of these grains, wheat, the wheat global wheat reserves are now quite low. So it's going to take pretty good crops around the globe to replenish that. And if anything goes wrong with the crops, then the prices go over the moon from that background of small stockpiles. We get into the supply inelasticity situation and rising demand, which has pushed the industrial metals. So that can happen with the agricultural commodities if anything goes wrong with the crops against this background of much reduced stockpiles. But of course, the agricultural commodities will not be able to stay at those heights anywhere near the way metals have, and I think over time will continue, albeit in a volatile fashion, because the supply of the agricultural commodities can be increased when you get the reasonably good production levels at a rate that we can never see in terms of increasing production of various different metals. And incidentally, on these industrial metals, and you'll see lots of reports flying around, when you already have, and we've posted some of them, and I've been receiving more recently, but there are a lot of people who are keen to talk those industrial metals down to get another bite at the cherry. That's part of the whole financial game. Maybe they'll succeed. That wouldn't surprise me all that much, and that would create a terrific opportunity if it did happen, but I would caution against shorting there at a time when there's so little supply about and evidenced by those backwardations or tiny contangos where there are contangos in those markets. And I think I've gone on long enough here, so apologies if I've gone on much too long for you. I'll just wrap up and say have an absolutely fantastic weekend, and it's been quite a profitable week, and may that continue for you next week and well beyond. All the very best.